This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Florida's ecosystems and industries face emerging threats in an increasingly global world, threats like climate change and habitat destruction. But today on our show, we talk with a forest researcher at the University of Florida who's keeping his eye on invasive pests and pathogens that threaten our state's forests, food crops, and native plants and animals. One threat he's identified is a tiny beetle that is lethal to some American tree species, and it could pose a multi-million-dollar threat to the timber and hardwood industry. More on that in the second half of our show. But first, World Hepatitis Day is coming up on Friday, July 28th, and it's part of a global initiative to eliminate viral hepatitis by 2030. With vaccines for types A and B already, the vaccines in development for type C also. The most prevalent forms of the virus may indeed be on a path to extinction, but prevention experts say that the biggest hurdle they face is awareness. Millions of people are walking around with a chronic form of the disease and they haven't displayed symptoms yet, so they don't even know they have it, meaning they are quite possibly helping to spread it around unknowingly. That's why the Collier County Department of Health is adding free hepatitis screenings this week to its usual HIV testing. Joining us to talk about Collier County's efforts to raise awareness is Eduardo Rodriguez. He's the prevention and training consultant with the HIV and hepatitis program at the Department of Health in Collier County. Welcome to the show, Eduardo.
Thank you, Julie, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to reach our Southwest Florida community with our prevention hepatitis message.
Also joining the show today from Tallahassee is Dr. Karina Blackmore. She's the director of the Division of Disease Control and Health Protection and an epidemiologist for the state of Florida. Dr. Blackmore, thanks for being part of the program.
My pleasure.
We are talking about hepatitis. What do you want to know about it, and what has been your experience with the virus? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. First, Dr. Karina Blackmore, as the state epidemiologist, with 4 to 5 million Americans with some form of hepatitis, are we facing an epidemic?
We certainly have had a number of cases of hepatitis over time, and the vaccines that we have for hepatitis A and hepatitis B are helping us decrease those rates, and certainly have concerns about hepatitis C, though, too, with the baby boomer population and the exposures that occurred a number of years ago, but the chronic effects of the disease showing up much later.
Is it an epidemic that we've been living with so long that it doesn't seem that alarming? Because you don't really hear about it a lot.
It certainly is a disease that is not new. Hepatitis is definitely a number of diseases. What makes it called hepatitis is that they all affect the liver. So hepatitis A and hepatitis B and hepatitis C are not actually related diseases. They're three different diseases that affect the liver. And they have indeed been common for a number of years. Hepatitis C, I think, is the one that we learned about the last. We really didn't discover the disease until the late 80s. And as you mentioned, it's also a disease we currently don't have a vaccine for. We do have vaccines for hepatitis A and hepatitis B, and definitely want to get the word out to make sure that those at risk for those diseases get vaccinated.
I was doing research for the show, and it seems like hepatitis is kind of an umbrella word. Does that just mean anything that's causing inflammation in the liver?
And yes, that's correct. That yes, it is basically a symptom of an ill liver, and the liver can get ill from a number of different reasons, both infectious and non-infectious. For example, alcoholism is one way of hurting your liver, and you get the same kind of symptoms that you do with infectious hepatitis. But what we're talking about today and what we are involved with in the Department of Health are these infectious hepatitis A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm. So Eduardo Rodriguez with the Collier County Department of Health, you work in trying to raise awareness of hepatitis. Do people in Collier County take it seriously?
Well, for a long time, hepatitis was called the silent epidemic because people don't talk about it, they are not aware, they don't get the basic information they need to prevent it in the first place. They don't understand the importance of getting tested and the benefits, for example, of being vaccinated. And that's why we go out to do outreach out there in the community to raise awareness and to trigger a personal questioning about personal risk and what you can do to avoid getting this infection. Because, yes, in spite we have, you know, state-of-the-art treatment now available, and a lot of resources are pouring into the hepatitis field, treatments are still not widespread, and not everybody have access to treatment, but everybody could come and get tested, find out, and of course get vaccinated. So that's why we want to take one thing at a time and promote this event and raise awareness about this disease.
Can people get vaccinated later in life?
Yes. The vaccine, there is, the doctor said, vaccine is available for hepatitis A and B, and there are some studies trying to find out vaccine for hepatitis C, but we're still away from that. You need to complete, for example, in the hepatitis A cases, two doses in a period of 6 months, and immunization, you reach immunization for life. Regarding hepatitis B, you need to complete 3 doses in a period of 6 months, and you might probably need a booster in 15 to 20 years. It's recommended, but you also reach immunity. And it is available through our program, and if you have risk for these two infection, of course you will have the possibility to get vaccines.
Do you find that people kind of have a preconceived notion about hepatitis? They associate it with promiscuity or drug use that makes people feel like it doesn't really apply to them?
Well, that's because they don't know the basic information. Why am I saying this? Hepatitis B is considered a sexually transmitted disease. It's a blood-borne pathogen. Blood-to-blood contact is the most common way of transmission, but also you can transmit it through sexual contact. So it is considered a sexually transmitted disease. If you had unprotected sex with someone or your partner is infected with hepatitis B, then you're running the risk. And since hepatitis B and HIV share the same route of transmission, also a mother-to-child transmission can occur during pregnancy as well as during the delivery or at birth. So people need to be aware of this. Hepatitis C is very different. It's only transmitted through blood-to-blood contact, you know, and if you are someone who injects drugs or intravenous drug users, are they share needles are a higher, runs a higher risk for this infection.
So, Doctor, I wanted to talk more. I was going to turn to Dr. Blackmore. I wanted to talk about hepatitis C. You said that that was going to be an increasing area of interest with baby boomers coming of age. Does hepatitis C stay in the person's system and then show up later?
Yes, so hepatitis C is definitely a silent disease in many regards. Most people that get hepatitis C don't know that they have it. They don't have any symptoms initially or have very mild symptoms that they or their doctor wouldn't recognize necessarily as hepatitis C. And then later in life, they start to get problems or can get problems that are associated with a failing liver, basically then either cancer or cirrhosis of the liver later in life. And today, actually, hepatitis C is a leading cause of liver transplants and liver cancer in the United States.
So people will have this for years and years and then all of a sudden have a problem with their liver later in life. Are there extenuating circumstances that will cause that hepatitis C to flare up later? Or can they just go all the way to their grave and never have a symptom?
They could. I mean, about 15% of people who get hepatitis C actually recover from hepatitis C, if you will. And then it's whether you do develop symptoms later in life is somewhat affected of how well you take care of your liver. Certainly if you have other liver diseases, infectious liver diseases, that's one thing to be worried about. So we certainly recommend hepatitis C carriers to be vaccinated against hepatitis A and hepatitis B. Alcohol use is another thing. We want people with hepatitis C to avoid anything that sort of stresses the liver. Medications can also be an issue because the liver actually metabolizes any kind of toxin or medication like that. And so definitely we want hepatitis C patients to be in close contact with a doctor about anything, any stresses that they put on their liver so that they, because if they do, the progress to a chronic disease is going to be faster.
So people can kind of be carriers and just be spreading it around if they don't know that they have it.
That's correct, and that's true for both B and C, that that during an earlier part of the chronic disease, they don't know that they have it, or they may not know that they have it, or they don't have symptoms from it, and at that point, they could spread the disease. As was mentioned, hepatitis B is much more contagious. It can be spread through sexual contact and contact with various types of bodily fluids. Infants who are born to hepatitis B positive mothers can be chronically infected, and the virus also survives pretty well in the environment. So in the healthcare setting, for example, is another area where we're concerned about hepatitis B transmission. Hepatitis C, as was mentioned too, drug use certainly is a big concern currently for ongoing hepatitis C transmission. But as I mentioned before, many were infected either from the blood supply a long time ago, or from drug use, or from transplants before we knew that hepatitis C existed. Now, of course, today our blood supply is safe. Both there's screening for both hepatitis C and hepatitis B in our blood supply to make sure that people are not infected that way.
But as an epidemiologist, do you see the recent rise in heroin use as a frightening specter when we're looking at something that spreads easily through needle use?
Certainly, any drug use, intravenous drug use, especially among people who share equipment, because that's what spreads the disease, that when the equipment is contaminated from one person and then is used by another person, that's how the virus gets around. And certainly any infectious drug use is a concern for many reasons, the drug use itself and certainly the diseases that are spread that way.
Yeah. We are talking about hepatitis and attempts to rid the world of the virus by 2030. If you're just joining the show, we're talking with Eduardo Rodriguez, who works with the HIV and hepatitis program in Collier County. We're also talking with Dr. Karina Blackmore with the Florida Department of Health, also the state epidemiologist. Do you want to be part of this conversation? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can also contact us through social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. Eduardo Rodriguez with the Collier County Department of Health. This week, your organization is offering free testing along with HIV and STD screenings on Wednesday and Thursday. How does that testing work? Is it a blood test?
Yes, we actually are offering the whole package of hepatitis, HIV, and STD screening here in Naples, as well as in the Immokalee Health Department. It is a blood test for people who are high-risk individuals. We have also available the rapid hepatitis C testing, so they can find the results in only 20 minutes. But the majority of them will get the hepatitis panel to find out what is exactly going on in their liver regarding hepatitis A, B, and C, and that will give us more information.
So the rapid test, which turns around...
And testing, during the counseling and testing session, we actually do a risk assessment, and depending on the risk of the individual, we decide which test we're going to do.
Oh, okay. So somebody goes... do they have to be a Collier County resident?
Not at all. Actually, it's open to anybody. We want everybody to come and get tested, of course.
So somebody goes, they go through kind of an interview process in which they talk about their lifestyles and choices that they made even up to 20, 25 years ago, you know, and they tell you all about that. And then you decide whether or not to do, whether they kind of qualify, I guess, based on their habits for a hepatitis C, A, B, and B, A and B panel, both?
Yes, that's correct. And also take into account that a lot of people that wants to have their rapid testing done, it is very hard to draw blood. So we, you know, if we have difficult, we have also, always available the rapid testing instead of the drawing blood and send it to the lab, which is the best test.
That's the one that catches the A and the B as well.
Yes, that will give you the result for hepatitis A, B, and C. And if you develop antibodies at some point in your life, that doesn't mean that you are infected. It could mean that you were exposed or you were vaccinated. I'm talking about A and B, of course. And if hepatitis C antibodies is detected during this test, then at the state lab, they run a more accurate test, we call RNA test, to actually confirm that infection.
And then if you have an active virus in your system.
Yes.
Do people need to bring any kind of documentation when they come? Is it walk-in only or appointments?
No, we don't. It's a walk-in those 2 days. I mean, during the entire week, you don't need appointment. You just show up and on the first come, first, you know, get the service. And we prefer that people, of course, in the case of rapid testing, have an ID. But we're not going to let anybody walk out that door without getting tested. That's our goal.
And
talk about the risks.
And this is going to only detect viral hepatitis. This test is not going to pick up non-viral hepatitis.
That's correct. A lot of people have already known that they already infected with hepatitis, but they need to have all the tests and do a follow-up and get the viral load test and the enzyme of the liver. And they think that they can get this test here at the health department and not. We are only testing for viral hepatitis and antibody tests.
Yeah, so
we're using antibody tests.
Yeah, so for a non-viral type of hepatitis, that would be something you'd go to your regular doctor for.
Exactly. But people that go to the doctor and get the blood work done think or they assume that a hepatitis C test is done and not. Hepatitis C is a very specific test, so I recommend everybody to either ask the doctor right away or come to the health department and get tested specifically for hepatitis C if they have risk for this infection.
And Dr. Blackmore, can you tell me a little bit more about non-viral hepatitis? That's just basically other liver diseases. There's an autoimmune hepatitis, and then alcohol and drug poison causes. How do those happen?
Yeah, there certainly are a number of reasons that your liver can get sick, if you will. The autoimmune hepatitis that you're talking about has to do with the body's immune system actually then attacking the cells in the liver and destroying the cells in the liver. Liver cancer certainly is not an uncommon disease, and there are different kinds of cancer types that occur in the liver because there are a number of different types of cells that you have in the liver, and each of those can develop cancer that can be partly genetic, people's predisposition for that type of cancer, and also, of course, is affected by the stressors that you put on your liver as well. And then toxins, various kinds, alcohol being the most common one, but certainly in other countries where the food quality is not as good as it is in the United States. There are fungal toxins like aflatoxin that causes liver disease. So it's not unique to one particular toxin. It's just that any toxin that you have is cleared in the liver and obviously makes the liver work harder. And if you are exposed to a lot of it, that's going to be stressful for the liver and be more likely then for the liver to really either get inflamed or wear out. That's really what happens with the liver cirrhosis. The cells die in the liver and are replaced by a fibrous tissue that doesn't have the ability that our really amazing liver has to metabolize nutrients and do all kinds of things that we need the liver for.
Kind of like scar tissue.
That's correct.
So there are some parts of the body that have a reputation for being able to recover from disease and others not so much. For example, you know, nerve damage tends to be harder and possible to reverse. How is the liver? Can it recover from something like hepatitis?
It can. The liver is actually a very amazing organ, and that's why liver transplants have been one of the organs that, you know, was developed first as a transplant candidate, because you can take part of a healthy liver from somebody and move it to somebody else, and then that part of the liver that you removed and the liver part that you removed can actually grow back. So our liver does have a lot of ability to recover depending on, again, if you have an acute infection, for example, of hepatitis A, then you're likely to recover completely. But it's in these chronic infections, the B and the C that we were talking about, where the virus stays in the system and continues to tear on the liver, and again, especially if you have additional stressors on the liver, at some point then it becomes too much, and that's when you get the chronic disease later in life that could be potentially fatal.
That makes it hard to come back. And we have a question. You mentioned hepatitis A, and this might apply to that. This is Mary in Naples. She asked a question about hepatitis being transferred from a diner when wait staff puts their fingers on a dirty dish or glass when the table's being cleared. Is it possible for something like that to spread it? She says servers do it all the time to bus as many dirty dishes off the table as possible, but can something like that transfer hepatitis?
So hepatitis A, unlike B and C, is spread through the intestinal tract, and it's very contagious. So a person with an active hepatitis A infection that works in a diner or especially works handling food without gloves can potentially spread hepatitis A to that food. I think the risk is higher if you actually get virus on something that you actually eat than on the utensils. But hepatitis A is pretty contagious, and we definitely recommend persons with active hepatitis A not to work in a food establishment.
But is hepatitis A, that's the one that you can get rid of?
That's correct. That's the virus that is does not have a chronic phase. It's an acute phase only. And it's unlike the other two hepatitis, the B and the C, the hepatitis A is not bloodborne. It is spread through the intestinal tract, and hygiene obviously becomes really important after you go to the restroom. So it's a very different organism, and it is can cause foodborne outbreaks in a way that hepatitis B and C don't.
I'm kind of looking at them like, you know, hepatitis A is more kind of like the flu. You get it and you get rid of it. Hepatitis B and C are more like fever blisters. You get it and it's the gift that keeps giving. You just always, it stays around.
That's correct. Hepatitis B, unless you're infected at birth, if you're a baby's infected, we take that very seriously, because most of those babies, almost all of those babies, get chronically infected. So we want those babies treated with both immunoglobulin and vaccine immediately at birth to avoid becoming chronically infected. But if you're an adult, the chance of you getting chronic hepatitis B is about 6 to 10%. The story is slightly different, though, for hepatitis C, where most people that are infected and end up getting chronically infected. So those two, again, can become chronically infected. You can become chronically infected from those two, B and C, but not from A.
Mm-hmm. So, Eduardo, I want to go back to you. And can you tell me a little bit about co-infection with people who also have HIV? Does hepatitis hit the HIV-positive people harder?
Well, the co-infection issue is a real challenge for the treatment and for the client, also for the patient. These two infections share a lot of things have things in common, but they don't get along too well. So if you have hepatitis, if you are already dealing with HIV, the last thing you need is to be infected with hepatitis C. Why? Because all the medications that you take for HIV, the antiretroviral, are processed through the liver. They are very heavy on the liver. The liver is already compromised with this treatment. And if you all of a sudden get hepatitis C infection, it will speed up all the process there, and of course, people will go down easily. So we can treat them, we can deal with them separate, but when they come together, it is like a real challenge. They can get treated separate, but together, once again, it's not easy.
It's kind of adding insult to injury. When you end up with hepatitis on top of HIV, it makes it just that much harder to treat both.
Yes. Definitely. Once again, what is good for one of them, you know, speed all the process in the liver for the other one, and you know, kind of accelerate the damage of the liver. So the liver failure could be early than ever, or liver cancer or cirrhosis of the liver.
Mm-hmm. And it's estimated that 15,000 people die from liver cancer, a chronic liver disease that's associated with viral hepatitis every year. Eduardo, how does hepatitis end up killing someone? How does it end up going forward to where it can kill somebody?
Well, ironically, even when there is now a cure for hepatitis C, for example, hepatitis C infection, and we know how to prevent its transmission, viral hepatitis continues to be a health problem. And, you know, not only here, all around the world, people are getting hepatitis C at a faster, you know, pace now, and the numbers are going up. And over the time, they could develop a cirrhosis hepatic, or a liver cancer, liver failure, due to the damage that this virus causes in the liver. Now, going back to your question, could you please help me to focus on the question again?
Well, I was just talking about how it advances to the point where it ends up becoming a fatal disease. It's just that it ends up causing cirrhosis, and then it eventually leads to cancer. Do people not notice the symptoms as they're progressing forward? Are they that subtle? What are the symptoms?
Well, let me start by saying that 10% of the people, you know, could actually clear up the virus. If they have a strong immune system, they can fight it off. Other people, when they get the treatment, are very successful clearing the virus. But for those who don't get the follow-up, they don't know what is the vital load of the liver, which is a strong indicator or about how healthy or how damaged is the liver at one point, and will give the doctors the baseline for the decision whether to start treatment right away or wait a little bit longer to see how your immune system can, you know, fight back. But for those who don't get the treatment or don't know, because the CDC estimate that 75% of the people infected have no idea they are, because they never come and get tested. For those people, they run a very high risk of complications, and they don't get, of course, access to this treatment, life-saving treatments that are available now. And the worst-case scenario, they continue spreading the virus out there. So it's a public concern that everybody not only gets educated, but get tested and get vaccinated for A and B. And co-infection issues not only with hepatitis C and HIV, co-infection issues with hepatitis, all the type of hepatitis, are also, you know, a complication. So taking into account all of this, our message to our community is that, you know, get educated, know the risk factors, avoid, in the case of hepatitis A, because someone in the community was concerned, I heard the question, mm-hmm. Avoid eating raw seafood or contaminated food. If you travel outside the country, do not drink tap water. Get into the habit of washing your hands frequently. And, of course, with the other one, use condoms and never share personal items, especially if they are dirty needles or contaminated with other people. a lot.
And one last question for you, Eduardo. Where can people go this week to take advantage of the free screenings and other services that you're going to have?
All right. They can come to the health department here in Naples and in Immokalee, as well as the Mary Unifeder Treatment Center in Immokalee. During the entire week, we are going to offer free testing, as well as the hepatitis and STD screening from 8 to 2 in Immokalee and from 8 to 4 here in Naples and in Mary Unifeder. And we are inviting everybody to come and get tested and find out if they are infected or not.
All right. And we have links to your website so people can find out all of that information also on WGCUnews.org in case anybody missed any of those details.
That's so correct.
We're going to have to leave it there for now, but I do want to thank our guest, Eduardo Rodriguez, with the HIV and Hepatitis Program in Collier County. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
I also want to thank Dr. Karina Blackmore from Tallahassee with the Florida Department of Health. Thanks so much for spelling out some of the more medical questions that we had.
My pleasure. Thanks for talking about hepatitis. It's a really important topic.
It seems like we don't hear about it a lot, but it's good to bring up. Coming up, how much of a threat could a small wood-boring beetle pose? Well, according to one Florida researcher, it could be a multi-million dollar threat to Florida's timber and lumber industries. Next, we'll talk with a forest entomologist raising the alarm about a beetle known as the sweet gum inscriber. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.